this hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL listeners. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
And we look forward to your questions. You can call us at 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. I'm Maria Chalaios, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox, and thanks for being with us this noon hour. And Governor, let's start out with the school board and the Natalie Klein decision, their decision yesterday to censure her. How do you feel now about a House impeachment?
So I think it's important to look at what they did. They didn't just censure her with as far as the board is concerned. They went much further than that. Basically, it was a unanimous vote, which I think is really important. That's a pretty divided board. There's a very conservative group and a less conservative group on there, and so to see that unanimity, I think was really important. But they went further than that. They basically barred her from participating in the meetings. She can't put anything on the agenda. She will be prohibited from participating on the committees, and so she has already effectively been impeached. That's been done. So we're working with the legislature. Ultimately, I have no say in what happens there. They'll determine what happens there. We'll get some notice from them. I think later this afternoon we may know more. They're going to meet with their caucus today, I've been told, and decide how they're going to proceed. If they still feel like impeachment is necessary based on what the board already did, or if there will be something else, and we'll support whatever they come back with.
Overall, though, let's talk about the bigger issue of political divisiveness and rhetoric that is going on, and how you feel about really, truly how this whole thing played out.
Well, obviously, deeply disappointed and concerned. And look, social media is a terrible place. Every day I see the worst of us on social media, and keyboard warriors, anonymous accounts, adults acting like bullies. It happens all over social media. I think what's really unique and different about this one, for those who are paying attention, is that this is someone who's not just in elected office, but specifically elected to protect our kids. Like, that's the only job of the school board, is to educate our kids and protect our kids. The very last person on earth who should be bullying, intimidating, doxing, using a young person in our state as propaganda is somebody in that position of authority. And so there's a real lack of trust when that happens, and I think that's why you've seen such a backlash, and I think appropriately so, a unanimous decision by the board. People who are maybe even extremely conservative on some of these issues who have spoken out against her as well, so that renews my faith a little bit, to know that there is a line somewhere that people can't cross and shouldn't cross, and that it was crossed in this particular case. But I certainly hope that we can get away from this attacking other people that we disagree with and tearing people down, and certainly looking for ways to intimidate and ostracize and criticize those who are different than us.
Okay, let's move on to the border. You just took a trip to the border. Why is Utah's governor on the border, and why is it so important to send National Guard troops there?
Yeah, so we had a great trip to the border. I was there with, I think there were 15 total governors that were there. We were there with Governor Abbott, who I know is a friend, really smart guy. We went and looked at what was happening at the border, and the reason that this matters is because the federal government has completely abdicated their responsibility, their constitutional responsibility, when it comes to the border and the border crisis. And it's important to note, this is not something that's just been manufactured on the right at all. Now, upwards, there's some polling that show that 70% of Democrats believe that we need to do more to secure the border. And this isn't about being having a lack of compassion. We have tremendous compassion here in the state of Utah. We've welcomed refugees and asylees from all over the world here, and we'll continue to do so. But you have to do it the right way, and that's not what's happening. And the reason it's so important is these numbers are overwhelming all of our systems. You heard governors say that every state is a border state right now, and that is true. For the first time in my lifetime, my memory at least, we have Democratic governors and Democratic mayors of blue states and blue cities saying, this is out of control. We can't keep doing this. And we are seeing those numbers spill over. And they're overwhelming the structures that we have in place, the infrastructure that we have in place to take care of refugees and immigrants. And the whole system is on the verge of collapse. And it's happening by people who don't qualify for asylum. That's I had one senator tell me that 80% of the people who are coming to the border and requesting asylum, and they read a script that's given to them by the cartels that they've paid to get them there, they read that script and then they get placed into a queue. But that queue now is so backed up that it's going to take a year to a year and a half, and 80% of them will not qualify if they actually go through the process, if they show up at their asylum hearing, which most of them won't show up at. And so the president has completely abdicated his responsibility. There are things on the books right now that he could do to drastically reduce what's happening. These people are taking their lives into their hands dangerously with these cartels, who are very bad people. I don't want to get too graphic, but there are 13-year-olds showing up at the border with condoms in their pockets because they know the terrible things that are going to happen to them by these cartels, and so they're leaving a not great situation and going into a much worse situation because our president has told them that we're going to allow you to come into our country without going through the right way. And then Congress has also completely dropped the ball. They could fix those asylum processes, and they've chosen not to do it. So all of that to say that we have a duty to help when Texas asks, and they ask, when people say, why on earth would you do that? I like to remind them that we have sent over 260 National Guardsmen to the border over the past 5 years, and I never got any pushback for that. But now when Texas needs some help, we're getting pushback. That doesn't make any sense to me, and we'll continue to help our partners wherever they need it.
We have a texter asking, so what are they doing and how are they doing? What have you heard from them?
Yeah, so they're just getting ready to head down. So they'll be down there soon. And there are different things. So we have a group of highway patrolmen that are going down who are experts in drug interdiction. So they'll be working with Highway Patrol, Department of Public Safety in Texas, to help to protect against the drug trafficking that's coming across the border and that's impacting us as well. And then we have some engineers that will be heading down, and we're not exactly sure what they'll be doing yet. They'll get their assignment when they get there, but I'm assuming they will be working with their counterparts in the Texas National Guard and other places when it comes to fencing and other border issues and helping to support the work that's already going on there.
Is the border the defining presidential issue?
It absolutely is. Yeah, I said this earlier today. President Biden is going to lose re-election. I believe that. The numbers are playing out. Obviously, a lot can change between now and November, but I feel very confident that President Biden is going to lose the election, and this will be the number one reason that he loses the election.
Okay, let's see. We have another minute before we take a break and take everyone's calls and questions. I know earlier today you spoke of rural job creation and why that is so important to you. Can you take just a minute and talk about that?
Sure, yeah. We care desperately that all of Utah is successful, and we've worked really hard. One of my promises when I ran, I'm from rural Utah. I grew up in a small town of 1,200 people, raised my kids in that small town. We're still there on weekends. We still have the house. We still work on the farm. I still drive a tractor. And for most of my lifetime, you could only get a job if you left the rural town that you grew up in and went to the Wasatch Front or somewhere else. So we've been working really hard to try to change that, and I'm really proud that we've been able to have significant job growth in rural Utah. We just had a company in Beaver County that just announced 160 new jobs and $20 million in investment that the state helped them to incentivize them to get that to happen. We've also moved a lot of state jobs to rural Utah. We now have about 6,000 state jobs in rural Utah, 61% of the Department of Agriculture, 52% of the Department of Natural Resources, 43% of UDOT, corrections and others are in the 30s. And so we've kept that promise, and I'm really grateful that kids, not every kid who grows up in rural Utah will have to leave to find a job and raise their family.
All right, Governor, let's take a break. Come back with calls and questions. Number to call, 801-575-8255. Text us at 57500.
Get your questions answered by Governor Spencer Cox. Call 801-575-8255 to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. We are taking your calls right now at 801-575-8255. Travis is on the line in Saratoga Springs, and good afternoon, Travis. What was your question?
Yeah, Representative Berkman intends to propose a constitutional amendment on putting the lottery up for the voters. Are you going to veto that when it comes across the desk, or legalize gambling or lottery here in Utah?
Yeah, thank you for the question. So, just an interesting kind of procedural note, which is a little different here in the state of Utah. So, to get a constitutional amendment on the ballot, which this would take, you actually have to get a 2/3 vote of the legislature to be able to do that. And what's interesting is the governor does not get to sign or veto. So I get to sign or veto bills, but not constitutional amendments. So interestingly enough, I actually have no say in what happens when it comes to constitutional amendments. So I don't get to sign or veto it. I can tell you just a couple things. One, I've said before, I'm not supportive of that. If we legalize gambling in the state, it's important to note, which this would be, it's a form of gambling. Then that would make it, even if we didn't have other forms of legalized gambling, for one, it would be then legal on all tribal lands. And so you would start to see casinos pop up for sure across the state. And more importantly, though, I've always said that lotteries are a tax on people that are bad at math. And so I prefer, I'm just not a fan, but I don't get a say. So ultimately, it's up to the legislature and then the voters of Utah. I would be very dubious if I told you that I thought there was any chance it would get even a majority vote, let alone a 2/3 vote. So while it's been proposed, I don't think it's going anywhere this session.
All right, Travis, thanks for your call. Let's go to James now in Provo. Good afternoon, James. What was your question?
Hi, Maria, and hi, Governor. I just wanted to address a topic you touched on earlier in the broadcast, your trip to the Texas-Mexico border. I was just wondering how long approximately will Utah Highway Patrolman be in Texas, and when you were there, did you talk to any people on the ground, either Border Patrol or civilians, regarding the situation?
Yeah, thank you. We have had an opportunity to talk with people on the ground. You've probably seen some of those interviews. I actually have a relative that works for Border Patrol, so I've had conversations about Border Patrol over several years. And you know, I hear the same thing from people on the ground there in Texas and the Border Patrol, and that is that look, they care deeply for people. Most people are good people, but not all people. They were able to arrest 168 people on the terror watch list who came across the border just last year. And those were the people they caught. We know that cartel members are paid extra to help those who shouldn't be coming into the country find a way to get across without getting caught. So if we caught 160 plus of them, how many of them got through? How many of the people on the terror watch list got through without being apprehended? And it's deeply problematic, and they're all very much concerned that the federal government is not doing more. As far as the timelines, we expect to have people down there for 30 to 45 days. We'll continue to work with Texas to see what they need and how long they need it. What I can say is Texas is proving what the federal government could do, and that is that in at these border crossings, they've actually been pretty effective in stemming the flow of undocumented immigrants. There were about 3,000 to 5,000 passing at the place where I was just in December, but because of the efforts of the Texas National Guard and the Texas Public Safety, there were about 3 people who tried to pass in that week that I was there. So it's definitely making a difference.
James, thanks for your call today. We have Noam on the line next from Harriman. Good afternoon, Noam. What was your question?
Yes, Governor, I asked you a question, or I commented 2 months ago around sort of your equivocation with Trump, your support of Trump in 2020, and what I expect will be your future support sometime in this election for Trump. You challenged me to think about why people that, the way this was how you characterized it, why people that you love have been drawn to him, and you noted a few issues like, you know, disaffection, whether it's economically, disenchantment with the media. But I think, you know, the piece that you missed is sort of the hate and bigotry that he validates in some people, perhaps many people that you refer to as people, you know, you love. And, you know, I'm Jewish. In my faith, Judaism, it's, you know, I feel I'm obligated to understand the sources of evil, but I'm also obligated to condemn. evil, and Trump is evil. And, you know, your acquiescence at the end of the day by your support for him 4 years ago and likely this year, you know, I don't, you know, obviously you have a different perspective. You have, you know, made compromises. And, you know, it's not about, I'm not trying to be disagreeable. You know, I think you're a good person, and it's extremely disconcerting for me, you know, when good people like yourself, acquiesce, to the evil that Trump is for partisan reasons, for, perhaps reasons of ambition.
Noam, was there a question that you wanted to ask of the governor?
It just makes me sad. There's, you know, I think, you know, I'll let the governor comment. You know, the name of the show is Let Me Speak to the Governor, not Ask the Governor. So I'll end there. I think I've made, you know, I've made my comments. I'm interested in the governor's perspective. So I guess that's the question.
Well, thank you, Noam, and thank you for reaching out. And again, thank you for the manner in which you do so. Look, I preach disagreeing better, and I think that's really important. And I'm grateful for the opportunity that you and I have to disagree on some things, and probably agree on some things as well. Look, I've tried to take the opportunity over the past several years to speak out against people who I disagree with when I think they've done or said things that are dangerous or hurtful. I've certainly done that with the former president. I've done it with the current president, and I can assure you that I will do it with the future president. I just mentioned I do believe that Donald Trump is going to be elected. I think both parties are making a major mistake. I've been very clear on this, that I think it's a mistake to nominate either of the presidential frontrunners, and most Americans agree with me. Most Utahns agree with me. The data is pretty clear on this. That upwards of 70% of Americans don't want either of the current frontrunners to become the next president. I have some concerns about the way we nominate our candidates. I think that's a mistake. I think the fact that we've only had two relatively small states, Iowa and New Hampshire, weigh in, and yet it's pretty much already set. I think that the first party to figure this out and not nominate an octogenarian will do much better. And yet I don't get to make those decisions, right? The voters get to make those decisions. I'm a Republican, and the Republicans will pick their nominee. And it does look like that's going to be President Trump. The Democrats are going to pick their nominee, and it looks like it's going to be President Biden. And I feel pretty confident right now, a lot can change, that he's going to lose that election to President Trump, and we'll work through that. And so, look, I will represent the state of Utah. That's my job. My job is to represent the people of Utah and the voters of Utah, and to hold our federal government accountable, regardless of who is in office, and to work closely with the federal government, regardless of who is in office. I worked very closely with President Trump, had a great relationship with them 4 years ago. I've tried hard to work closely with President Biden. We've been able to accomplish some things together. I've been very disappointed in many of his policies, and I've spoken out against them when that's the case, and I will continue to do that moving forward.
Do you think you're talked about octogenarians? Do you think there should be some sort of age requirement or limit for a presidential run?
Yeah, I do. I do, and I wish we had one. I have to tell you, Maria, it was funny. I shared this morning, but I got a voicemail from a friend's dad who is in his 80s, and he's struggling a little bit with memory. He's in a rest home, and he called his son and said, "Hey, I have a message for Governor Cox. You have to get it to him. It's really important. You know him. The country needs to hear this." He said, "We should not be electing 80-year-olds to run our country. I'm in my 80s, and I'm just telling you, we should not be doing this. This is a huge mistake." And I think we've seen that in both candidates. We've seen many moments, public moments, where this is the hardest job on earth, Maria. I'm the governor of 3.4 million people, 1% of the United States. And I'm telling you, this job is crushing. I'm 48 years old. I'm in the best shape of my life. I run 7 miles this morning, and it takes every ounce of energy I have to run this state. You cannot tell me that someone in their 80s can be running a country of 360 million people. It just does not work. And anybody who tells you otherwise is fooling themselves. And both parties are doing this. By the way, if you want to vote for a third party candidate, there are three kind of top third party candidates out there. They're all over the age of 70, Maria. Look, I know Gen X is the forgotten generation. I know I'm the generation nobody cares about, and we'll get skipped over for everything. But my goodness, this is crazy. It's crazy what we're doing out there.
So when are you going to run for president?
I'm never going to run for president.
Definitively, you're never going to run.
They don't let people like me be president. And that's fine. But there are lots of good options out there, you know, in both parties. I would say there are great options out there. People who are really smart, who have energy, who can do this work. And the rest of the world is looking at us and just kind of laughing right now.
All right. Let's take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Text us 57500.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL listeners. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon. I'm Maria Chalais, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox, taking your calls at 801-575-8255 and your text questions at 57500. Next texter, Governor, says, what can we do better to combat gun violence in the U.S. after yesterday's mass shooting in Kansas City?
Well, that is certainly tragic. Again, unfortunately, another mass shooting. A lot of details that we don't know about that one, Maria. We're still trying to get more information, and it's something that we're concerned about. And sadly, you know, the federal government passed some legislation. Gosh, I guess a year ago, maybe a little longer ago than that. And several states have very strict gun laws and regulations that don't seem to be making a difference or impacting the numbers there much. Utah's been pretty fortunate to avoid the worst of those, but sadly we know that as we continue to grow as a state, those things could happen here. What I will say is Representative Wilcox is working very hard on this issue right now in the state legislature. He's got a bill that's out. It's moving. There's a lot of discussion going on there, particularly around schools, which is where we've seen kind of the most heinous the worst acts. We've got a lot of work that is happening around mental health and more resources for mental health. In far too many of these shootings, what we find out afterwards are that these are people who have struggled deeply with mental health. A lot of times, their communities knew about these problems, but were unable to get them the help that they needed, or even involuntary commitment where necessary. So we're looking at those laws as well. I wish I had a magic formula and something that could pass a legislature or Congress, but I don't have that yet. All I can tell you is that we've got some really good people that are working on these issues, and I'm hoping we can get some legislation done this year.
All right, back to the phone lines. Kim is on the line in Alpine. Good afternoon, Kim. What was your question?
Governor Cox, I just wanted to say I really appreciate your remarks on the previous caller about President Trump and your comments about President Biden. Very, very well said. Second, I want to just thank you very much for your support of the Golden Age Games coming up in August, the Veterans Golden Age Games. Thank you so much for your support with that.
You're welcome, Kim. Thank you.
The other the question I have is, in the state of Utah, when a state trooper or officers from city or county stop an individual and find out that this individual is undocumented, they're illegal in the country, what is the policy for state troopers to handle individual like that? Are they immediately arrested and turned over to ICE? How is that handled?
Yeah, Kim, thank you. Again, thank you for the kind words. Thank you for your participation with our veterans and the great work there. You just answered the question. That's exactly what happens when someone is arrested and found to be undocumented. They are then immediately turned over to ICE, to the immigration officials, and then ICE will process them. If they're, you know, if they've committed another crime, then that will be evaluated at the time. They'll likely be deported depending on what's happened. They will look at their immigration processing status. As I mentioned before, many people who are now requesting asylum at the border then get put into a queue. The problem is that the system is so overwhelmed right now that it could take a year and a half for their date to appear before an immigration court. Just as an aside, about 80% of those, I've been told by members of Congress, about 80% of those who have applied for asylum will be denied asylum. They will not meet the qualifications, and then they will be deported. Again, the problem is it takes a year, 2 year and a half, and most people won't show up to their asylum hearings, and so then you're just here and lost to the system. So that's why it's so important. But yes, to answer your question, they're immediately turned over to ICE and immigration officials.
Next texter, Governor, is wondering why we're trying to legislate social media around kids when this seems to be a parent's job. They say it feels like government overreach.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. And I assure you that we are not in any way trying to take the place of parents. We're actually trying to do the exact opposite. And as any parent of kids with social media will understand, the social media companies have made it really hard for parents to do their jobs. I'm really proud about 83% of Utahns support much of what we're trying to do around social media, and I'm grateful we have 69% of people in Utah support removing phones from schools. That's what we're trying to do, is make it possible for parents to do their jobs. And right now we were told let me back up. I'm grateful to see social media companies starting to acknowledge some of the harms that they've created, starting to look at creating teen accounts, which are different from adult accounts. They told us they couldn't do this a year ago. They told us it was impossible. They lied to us, which they've been lying to the American people for a long time. They've been lying to parents. And so what we're trying to do is empower parents. My daughter doesn't have social media and didn't get a phone until much later. Nevertheless, it is still so very, very hard because social media companies aren't following laws that are on the books and are making it easier. They desperately need our kids to get addicted to their products, and we should empower parents to be able to stop that and push back.
Next listener is concerned about the homeless problem in our state. They say that the homeless moved out of the Rio Grande area, but now they're in Liberty Park and Fairmont Park in their neighborhood. There's camping.
Yep.
And they're wondering what is being done to help.
Sure. Yeah. No, I'm worried about that too. And so there are several bills and requests that we're sponsoring and pushing for and working towards with the state legislature this year, specifically for the issues that this texter is worried about. I've said very clearly that unsanctioned camping cannot be allowed in our state anymore. Now, to prevent that from happening, it takes resources, and we've been working on those resources, and they're absolutely right. People will often move from one place to another, even when there are shelter beds available, and that's unacceptable. Again, we can have compassion, and we can help people and get them treatment and a place to stay, or you can go to jail. Those are the options. People have to choose. Unsanctioned camping is not an option, but we desperately need more resources. So what we are doing is we're working with Salt Lake City, we're working with Salt Lake County and others, so we can move from spot to spot. What I would recommend is when there is unsanctioned camping, that you should report that to law enforcement. And it doesn't happen immediately, but over time, we'll continue to reach out and get to all of those spots. Again, giving people help, giving them options, a place to stay, beds available. But if you want to camp in an unsanctioned manner, you're going to have to go somewhere else to do that.
All right, going to take a break, come back with the final segment of Let Me Speak to the Governor. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
Governor Spencer Cox is taking your questions right now. Call 801-575-8255 or text him at 57500. This is Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for spending your noon hour with us, Maria Chalaos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. Back to our phone lines, Tracy waiting patiently in Harriman. Tracy, what was your question?
Question is that I grew up really close to where Governor Cox grew up, and my father worked at Snow College. Had he gone somewhere else, like to SLIC, and at the time it was UCC, Utah Valley, I just want to know, is the your new jobs that you have in rural Utah, kudos to that. Is there salary comparable to what is in the Wasatch Front? Whereas my father could have left and gone, like I said, to them and would have been gotten a higher pay, whereas he stayed there and we were on like reduced lunch and got all of these things because my father wasn't making enough.
Yeah. Tracy, thank you. It's nice to chat with a fellow Sam Peter, as we call ourselves, and Snow College Badgers. I love that. I'm a Snow College grad, so is my wife. And you're right. That was the hardest thing. I mean, you'd have Snow College professors, again, whose kids were on free and reduced school lunch, right? And so we have been really working on that. As we've got now 6,000 of our jobs in state jobs are in rural Utah, and they get paid the same or similar to their to the jobs on the Wasatch Front, and so we're very proud of that. I've also worked really hard on the education front. We gave the largest increase to teachers last year in our state's history, and those $6,000 raises went to all of our teachers, regardless of where they lived. So if you lived in San Juan County, or you lived in San Pete County, or you lived in Park City, you got the same raise, the same $6,000. Now you get paid more in school districts, and for sure in Wasatch County or Summit County than you would in San Pete County. But when the state is involved, we're trying to do our best to equalize those. And when our Office of Economic Opportunity is helping to incentivize jobs into rural Utah, that's the same thing. It may not pay exactly as much as here, but they have to pay more than the average wage in that area in order to get those incentives. And so those are big things that we're doing to help make sure that that people get to stay. You don't have to leave your hometown if you really want to stay there and raise your own families.
Governor, our next listener is concerned about dental care on Medicaid, and they are wondering if you would pass a bill or approve a bill for adult Medicaid to cover things like fillings and crowns.
That great question. I would need to take a little more of a look at that. I'm assuming that there is a state nexus, that the state has the ability to do that, to be able to use Medicaid for oral health care. It's certainly something that I would be willing to look at if there was a bill that came my way on that one. We are working with Medicaid on lots of different issues, including housing and how that's impacting some of our homeless population as well. But that's one where I'd need a little more information.
Next listener wants to know what you see the future of the economy. They're wondering if there's going to be a decline in the Utah economy anytime soon.
Hey, that's a really good question, and one I haven't been asked on this program recently. So whoever texted that in, thank you for asking. So I meet regularly with economists, our state economists and others, and over the course of the last year, it was interesting to see how those meetings kind of went. What we were hoping for as interest rates were rising was what economists have referred to as kind of a soft landing. Could you raise interest rates and get inflation under control without tanking the economy and sending us into a recession? Now, historically, we haven't done a great job of that. It's maybe still too early to claim victory, but it does seem like we've been able to do that. Inflation is still bad. It's still but it's not as bad as it was, right? So that's good news. And we haven't really hit recession territory. Our unemployment rate has gone up a little bit. We were about 2.2%, and now I think it's 2.7%, which is still well below what economists consider full employment. In fact, 2.2% was probably unhealthy. We had lots of job openings and not enough bodies to fill them. Right now, we still have more job openings than we have people available to fill those jobs, and so I'm not really worried about that. All I can say is that everything we're hearing back from our economists is that Utah is in better shape than the rest of the nation. So even if there is still the potential for a mild recession out there, we don't think Utah will be impacted as much. And most of the consensus is starting to change that the odds of a recession are pretty low right now. So I'm bullish on Utah's economy. Things are going very well. We'll get our numbers, I think, tomorrow when it comes to consensus numbers for the budget. We have 2 weeks left in the legislative session. We don't know what number we're budgeting to yet. We have a preliminary number, but the final number will come out tomorrow. And that will tell us a little bit more about what's happening in the economy over the past couple of weeks.
Let's talk for a minute about the legislative session. You mentioned 2 weeks left. What are some of the priorities? What are the things you need to see happen?
Yeah, it's 45 days. It's a lot. It feels like 545 days sometimes, but we do have 2 weeks left. I so appreciate legislators and their sacrifice. It's a huge lift for them. I mentioned over 500 bills will pass. What we're watching right now, to me, the two most important issues and something I've talked about in my State of the State address, which I'm sure everybody listened to or watched, but mostly just my mom, and
no,
I appreciate her.
Not true. I watched.
Thank you, Maria. So the two big ones for me are homelessness. We've talked a little bit about that right now. We have several bills about making sure that we're spending dollars and we're accountable for that in a way that protects taxpayers. So and we can show that it's working. If it's not working, we shouldn't be spending it. Those. We need that the first. I've proposed the first comprehensive state plan for homelessness that has ever been proposed, and so we're working on that, and I'm hoping to get that across the finish line. We also have work around housing and housing attainability. This is the big one. I've put an audacious goal out there that we need to build 35,000 starter homes. These are 1,100 square to 1,400 square foot homes, smaller homes. The homes I grew up in, the homes I raised my kids in, same for most people who are listening right now. We stopped building those about 15 years ago for lots of different reasons. But we need homes under $400,000, homes that our kids and grandkids can afford. We need that more than anything, and I hear that over and over again. We've got some pretty bold proposals right now with the legislature to help unlock and make that happen. The League of Cities and Towns is working with us. We're so grateful for them. The final bills should be out in the next day or two, and we've got 2 weeks to get those through, and our fingers are crossed. We're working hard.
Question you get every single time you visit with us. Why doesn't the state drop taxation on Social Security?
And I give the same answer every single time. We have, and we are, and we've dropped it every single year that I've been here, and I'm hoping we can do it again. I've said before I would love to completely remove the tax on Social Security. Right now, I think we've removed it on anybody who makes under $75,000 a year. There's zero tax, so most people on a fixed income now no longer pay any of that tax. I would love to see them keep raising that threshold or get rid of it altogether. Ultimately, that's up to the legislature and not me, but we're headed in the right direction.
Next question is, what is the best way to get involved to make a difference in things happening in the community and state?
Oh, my goodness. Look, thank you. Whoever asked this, thank you. I mentioned this in my State of the State address, but Charles Cook, a wise writer and thought leader, has said that he thinks we're making a mistake when we tell our kids they should go out and change the world. We should tell them to go out and change their community. I truly believe that most of the problems facing our nation, our world today, are because of a lack of community. We should be building community. One way to get involved is to serve. Look for service projects. Service is the best way to depolarize our nation and build community. Look for ways to help the local food pantry, whatever it is. Give back to your community. If you care about any legislation or bills, it's easier than ever to get involved. You can log on to the legislature's website, le.utah.gov. You can listen right there to every debate, every hearing. You can actually comment. You don't even have to drive up here to attend one of the meetings. They let you comment online now, which is new and is a big deal. There's so many ways to get involved, and we desperately need more people to do that.
All right, Governor, that's the end of the program. Thank you so much for joining us again and taking calls and questions. We appreciate you. And join us again next month for Let Me Speak to the Governor. Have a great afternoon.